Welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, showcasing programs from the golden age of radio. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Coming up in this hour, horror. Later on, we hear Mystery in the Air with Peter Lorre, then a story from Edgar Allan Poe. Right now, it's Inner Sanctum Mysteries. This episode first heard on CBS and retransmitted via Armed Forces Radio on September 23rd, 1946. Paul McGrath, our host for the story, The Dead Laugh.
Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum. This is your host to welcome you through the squeaking door. Well, been shopping around for a nice case of murder? Of course you have. And you've come to the right place because the characters on this program simply kill themselves to keep you amused. Why, only the other day we were accused of making murder our business. But we wouldn't do that, friend. Oh, no. Because that would be mixing business with pleasure. And we consider it a pleasure to give some stiff the business. And now, friends, tonight's story is a triangle tale concerning a man, a woman, and a murderer. You've heard it said that those who laugh last laugh best. But we're going to prove that it never pays to get into a laughing contest with a ghost. Because ghosts always get the last laugh.
I know he's dead. Body's been in the grave for weeks. Yet, although I tell myself it's impossible, I can hear him laugh. That raucous, mocking sound haunts me. Same laughter I heard for the first time in the courtroom. He had never laughed during all the weeks of the trial. Never even smiled. This day, when he came before me for sentencing.
John Spencer, you have been found guilty of murder in the first degree. You wish to make a statement before sentence is imposed?
I killed Hicks. I'm willing to admit it now. But he was no good. He got just what he deserved. And everybody knows it. I'm not a killer. I never committed a crime before. And all I ask now is a chance.
John Spencer, the jury took all that into consideration when it recommended life imprisonment. However, I have the power to ignore that recommendation. It is my firm conviction that to allow one man to take the law into his own hands is to encourage others to do likewise. I therefore override the recommendation of the jury and sentence you to be hung by the neck until dead.
No. Judge, please. I've got a girl. We were going to be married. All I ask is to live so I can see her once in a while.
You should have thought of that before you committed murder.
It's easy for you to tell me what I should have done. But you won't always be on top. Maybe someday you'll be down here where I am. When that happens, I hope they throw the book at you just like you're doing to me.
Bailiff, remove the prisoner.
Won't I be laughing when that happens? Wherever I am, I'll be laughing fit to buzz.
Same old story. Prisoner pleads innocence or guilty with good cause. Asks mercy. When clemency is refused, condemned man curses judge and hopes that judge will someday find himself in a similar plight. Spencer's outburst failed to move me in the slightest. I'd heard it many times before. I went home to forget about the Spencer case. Yes, dear. I'll come in as soon as I've freshened up.
Come right now. I've been waiting here all day. Surely it's not too much to ask, is it?
All right, Laura. I'm coming.
Richard, I want you to meet my new nurse, Margaret Cummings. This is Judge Thornton, Miss Cummings.
How do you do?
Miss Cummings, haven't we met before?
That's hardly likely. It's probably my face. It's so
ordinary.
On the contrary, Miss Cummings. I should say your face is rather unusual.
Richard, suppose you stop that silly chatter about faces and talk to Miss Cummings about her duty.
Very well. Come into my study, Miss Cummings. We can talk better there. Sit down, please. There's not much to say, really. In the first place, my wife's heart condition isn't really dangerous.
Yes, I gathered that from Dr. Fletcher.
Oh, he told you about my wife, eh?
Oh, yes.
You're a professional person, nurse, and I believe in frankness. It makes things easier. My wife is 11 years my senior, getting on past middle age. She, is a bit worried. Not that I give her any grounds for it. Jealous. You understand?
Perfectly.
She's not an easy person to get along with. You'll have to humor her.
I'll do my best.
And, Miss Cummings?
Yes.
I was just wondering where it was that I saw you before. Escapes me. You know, Miss Cummings, your face is rather haunting. That was how it began. We played a game during those first few weeks. I would ask, Miss Cummings, where was it that I first saw you?
Don't you remember yet?
No, I don't.
Well, I do. And someday, if you're nice, I'll tell you.
We would laugh together. Having the girl in the house made me feel young again. But it didn't last. It ended one evening in Laura's room.
Richard.
Yes, dear?
Put down that newspaper. I want to talk to you.
I'm listening.
Don't you think you're going a bit too far, Richard?
Too far? What do you mean?
I mean Miss Cummings.
Oh.
I won't stand for it. I won't allow you to disgrace me in my own home. For the woman who's little more than a servant.
Oh, Laura, for heaven's sake.
I may be a bedridden invalid, but there is a limit.
You're jumping to ridiculous conclusions, Laura.
Ridiculous, am I? I suppose you'll deny you're in love with Miss Cummings. That you've been carrying on with her right under my nose.
Certainly I'll deny it.
I've got eyes, Richard. I've seen you two whispering together. I've watched how you look at
her. Oh, you're talking utter nonsense. There's nothing between me and Miss Cummings.
Nothing?
Nothing. Absolutely nothing.
Well, then, I'll give you a chance to prove what you say. I don't want Miss Cummings here. Dismiss her.
You want me to dismiss her?
Yes, Richard. I do.
Miss Cummings, I... Well, this is going to be rather unpleasant. You see my wife...
Yes, I know. She wants me to leave.
Yes. How did you know?
I couldn't help overhearing the conversation.
Well, then you also know why she wants you to leave.
Yes. But you warned me when I first came here that she was jealous.
It's been very pleasant having you here.
Thank you.
I'm going to miss you. Miss Cummings, could I have your home address?
Of course. Why do you want it?
I hope you won't think me presumptuous, but... Well, perhaps we might be able to see each other.
Would that be wise?
No, it wouldn't be wise. But I might as well face it. I couldn't hide it from Laura, and now I can't hide it from myself. I love you, Miss Cummings. That night I heard Spencer's laugh for the first time since the day in the courtroom. I set it down as a figment of the imagination born out of a feeling of guilt due to my disloyalty to Laura. I put it out of my mind. I had other things to think about. The slip of paper with Margaret Cummings' address on it was in my pocket. A dozen times during the next week, I picked the telephone to call her, but something held me back. It was fear, I guess. Fear that if I saw her again, I would be taking a final, irrevocable step. And then I couldn't stand it any longer without seeing her. I dialed her number.
Hello?
Is that you, Margaret?
Yes, who is this?
This is Richard.
Richard?
Judge Thornton.
Oh, hello. How are you? It's been so long, I thought you'd forgotten me.
There's little chance of that. Could I see you tonight, Margaret?
Why, yes, of course. Come over as soon as you like.
I dressed carefully. Examining myself in the mirror, I saw a tall man, still on the right side of 50. Still trim in figure and distinguished in appearance. When I got to Margaret's apartment, my heart was beating fast, like a boy on his first date. Somehow, I don't know quite how it happened, she was in my arms. I was kissing her.
Oh, no, we're being foolish.
Sit down, darling. Here, beside me.
Like this?
That's perfect. Margaret, would you marry me?
Mary, you can't be serious.
I was never more in earnest in my life.
Aren't you forgetting a little detail?
No, I'm not forgetting about Laura. She has a weak heart. She may die. And if she does...
I wouldn't count on it. Your wife takes very good care of herself. She may live to be 100.
But if she should die, would you marry me?
I don't know. It's not fair to ask me now. Not while your wife is still alive. Ask me later.
Pleasant evening at the club.
I didn't go to the club, Laura.
No.
I lied to you. I spent the evening with Margaret Cummings.
Richard.
You were right. I'm in love with her. I never knew what love meant before. I can't live without
her. You're mad. You don't know what you're saying.
I want a divorce, Laura.
Divorce? No.
I want it immediately.
You can't do this to me. Oh, my heart.
What?
Now see what you've done.
Laura.
Oh, the shock. My pills, Richard. Give them to me. Hurry. Hurry, Richard.
I knew she was pretending the heart attack.
Oh, Richard.
Hoping to play on my sympathy. That was Laura's favorite trick. It always worked before. Not this time. This time I would pretend until I was ready to act. I gave her the pills, watched her take them and sink back in the pillow.
Oh, thank you, Richard.
Feel better now?
Yes, dear, much better. I don't know what I'd have done without you here. I would have died. Oh, Richard, say you didn't mean what you said before. Don't you see, I couldn't go on living without you.
You won't have to, Laura.
Then you won't leave me for that girl.
I'll take care of you. Here, let me make you more comfortable. Pillow needs rearranging.
Yes, it does. Richard, what are you doing?
I'm fixing the pillow.
I don't know what I'm saying.
Lie still. Stop twisting around. This isn't much different from a heart attack. Laura? She's dead. Dr. Fletcher?
Yes?
This is Judge Thornton. Please come quickly, Doctor. My wife has had a heart attack.
It happened during an argument.
It was nothing important, Doctor. Just a domestic quarrel. And suddenly she had the attack. I gave her the pills, but by that time it was too late. I'd only known that a condition had become so dangerous.
Oh, Judge, you've nothing to reproach yourself for. These things happen.
Will you take care of the formalities, Doctor?
Oh, yes, of course.
The death certificate?
I'll list the cause as failure of the heart.
There was no need to act the part of the stricken husband after Dr. Fletcher left. I stood looking down at Laura's body. She was dead. And Dr. Fletcher's certificate would clear me of any suspicion of murder. I was free. Free to marry Margaret. I walked to Margaret's apartment that night. The street was dark, empty. I had the uncomfortable feeling that I was being watched, followed. Then I heard footsteps behind me. I hurried my pace, and the man behind me did likewise. Frightened as I was, I decided to stop and confront the follower. He came toward me, his face and figure shadowy in the dark. What do you want? Why are you following me?
You ought to know, Judge Thornton.
Who are you? Come closer so I can... Spencer. John Spencer. It can't be. You're dead.
Dead, am I? Well, you ought to know, Judge.
Take it easy, mister. Take it easy. Now, just tell me what happened.
I was being followed, officer. So I turned around to see who it was.
And did you see who it was?
Yes. And that's why I fainted. The man following me was a dead man.
What's that?
The man following me is dead. I know he's dead, officer.
I ought to run you in. You are crazy.
I had intended to tell Margaret that Laura was dead. I meant to ask her to marry me. But the encounter on the street drove those thoughts out of my mind. Arriving at her apartment, I went directly to the window and looked out. And there, across the street, leaning against the wall, I saw John Spencer.
Richard, I'm insulted.
What?
You didn't kiss me. You haven't even said hello.
Oh, I'm sorry, dear. But that man across the street, he can't be real. And yet, if he isn't...
What man, Richard?
Don't you see him?
No, there's no one across the street.
He was there a moment ago. I turned my head to talk to you, and now he's gone.
Darling, you're trembling. You must be sick.
Don't look at me like that.
Richard, what's the matter?
I guess I am sick. I'd better go and have a talk with Dr. Fletcher.
Yes, I remember the Spencer case very well, Judge Thornton. You could have spared Spencer's life, but didn't. And now you imagine that he follows you?
Yes.
But the man is dead.
Then it was his ghost that followed me. His ghost I spoke to. His ghost that laughs.
There are no ghosts, Judge Thornton. With one exception. The ghosts we carry about inside us.
What do you mean?
Well, these things you hear and see... These are hallucinations brought on by feelings of guilt. Spencer's been dead for weeks. So the question is, why should you experience guilt feelings at this late date?
I don't know.
Well, psychiatry has an explanation. Quite often in such cases, one refuses to face the guilt object and transfers his guilt feelings to some other person.
What are you driving at?
I'm suggesting that your guilt feelings are not caused by the Spencer incident. I'm going to ask you a blunt question. Did you murder your wife?
Why, of all the idiotic...
Now, just a moment, Judge. Just a moment. I've been rather uneasy about the circumstances of Mrs. Thornton's death.
But you yourself diagnosed it as a heart attack.
I accepted what you told me that night. A superficial examination of the body did indicate such a conclusion, yes. But your wife's cardiac condition was mild. Now, your guilt feelings lead me to suspect...
This murder talk is ridiculous. Were there any signs of struggle, any marks of violence? Of course not.
Mrs. Thornton might have been suffocated.
Oh, nonsense.
Perhaps. At any rate, I intend to recommend to the coroner that an autopsy be performed.
An autopsy?
Yes, it would determine whether or not death was due to suffocation. You should have no objection if I am mistaken.
You meddling fool.
Judge Thornton, put down that paper.
You are so clever.
Stay away from me. Come on! No!
I've gone too far now to stop at another.
I'd lost my head. I should have agreed to the autopsy. That would have given me a day or two in which to plan my escape. But now, as things were, it would be only a matter of hours before Fletcher's body was discovered. My thoughts twisted and turned in panic.
Maybe someday you'll be down here where I am. Won't I be laughing when that happens? Wherever I am, I'll be laughing fit to bust.
I ran. Ran like a frightened child. I needed help, and there was no one to turn to. Margaret. She loved me. She'd help me. I went to Margaret and told her what had happened.
You killed your wife.
For you. So we could be married.
And then Dr. Fletcher.
I had to kill him, Margaret. He was going to recommend an autopsy.
Why did you come here?
We've got to run away. We still have an hour or two. But we could charter a plane to Canada or Mexico.
What makes you think I'd run away with you?
I thought you loved me.
Don't be stupid. I'm going to turn you over to the police.
Margaret, you can't mean...
Can't I? Just watch me.
Margaret, listen before you pick up that phone. Even if you don't love me. Even if you won't go away with me. Give me a chance. Have mercy.
You make me laugh. Judge Thornton, who never gave anybody else a break, pleading for mercy. Well, turn around and ask the man behind you for mercy.
Behind?
That's right.
Spencer. John Spencer.
Take another look, Judge.
No, you're not John Spencer. There's a resemblance, but you're not John Spencer.
I'm his brother.
You're the man that was following me.
That's right.
I was tricked. Led on by Margaret to kill my wife, and forced by you to betray myself to Dr. Fletcher. But why? Why, Margaret? Why did you do this?
For revenge.
Revenge?
Yes. The first day I came to your house, you thought my face was familiar. Well, now I'll tell you where it was that you first saw me. It was in the courtroom at John Spencer's trial.
Courtroom? Yes. Yes.
Yes. Remember how he begged for mercy? He told you he had a girl, that he was engaged to be married, and you could have given him his life. But you sentenced him to his death.
What? For you, the girl?
Yes.
Spencer, did he know about this?
All this was his plan. His revenge. Hello, operator. Give me police headquarters. I want to report a murder. Yes, that's right, a murder. Tell them it's very important to get here as soon as they can.
I'm waiting now for the police to come. For the trial, for the sentence which I know will be death. As I wait, my thoughts go back to the courtroom.
You won't always be on top. Maybe someday you'll be down here where I am. And when that happens, I'll be laughing.
Judge Thornton certainly misjudged Margaret Cummings, which was a grave mistake. Why, he didn't have the ghost of a chance with her. She double-crossed him right into the graveyard. Oh, a word of caution. If you must commit a murder, be sure to select the proper weapon. I suggest a sharp-edged axe, because it provides you with a handy alibi. When the police want to know why you did it, you can claim the killing was accidental.
Inner Sanctum, on Tuned to Yesterday from September 23rd, 1946 on CBS. You're listening to An Hour of Horror on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Coming up next, Mystery in the Air with Peter Lorre, adapting the Edgar Allan Poe story, The Black Cat, which was first seen in the Saturday Evening Post in August of 1843, and several times on the silver screen. In fact, Peter Lorre starred in a version of the story 2 years before his death in the Roger Corman film Tales of Terror. Hear this NBC broadcast now from September 18th, 1947.
Mystery in the Air, starring Peter Lorre. Sentence of this court that you be hanged by the neck until you are dead, and may God have mercy on your soul.
No, I neither expect nor solicit belief for this wild story. I would be mad to expect it, yet mad I'm not, and very surely I do not dream, but while there is still time, I don't know why. I feel compelled to report a series of mere household events and their consequences. These events have terrified, have tortured, have destroyed me. Perhaps some are more calm, more logical, but certainly far less excitable than I will be able to explain them. I cannot. I can only tell you the facts, and that I have to do today because tomorrow I die.
Each week at this time, Peter Lorre, in the excitement of the great stories of the strange and unusual, of dark and compelling masterpieces culled from the four corners of world literature. Tonight, Edgar Allan Poe's immortal American classic, The Black Cat.
No, believe me, there was nothing, absolutely nothing in my childhood which forecast the terrible events that were to come. No, as a child, I was very gentle. I got along well with everyone, but most I liked animals, yes. All kinds of animals. And then I married quite young, and I was very happy to find that my wife shared my feelings. Very soon, we had quite a collection. Oh, we had birds and goldfish. We had a dog and some rabbits, and we had a cat. I'll never forget the day my wife brought it home. Hello, hello. You're home so early.
Look, Charles, look. Look what I brought.
Oh, look at it. Oh, the little kitty. Where did you get it, darling?
Oh, the poor little thing. Some dogs were chasing it, and I just rescued it in time.
Yes,
it was so frightened.
Yes, but it isn't frightened anymore.
Oh, it seems to love you, Charles. Well, then that's not strange. All animals do.
Yes, yes, yes. Nobody's going to hurt you, kitty, kitty. No, man. How about some milk, huh? Yes. There, you see? Oh, you must have been very hungry.
Yes.
Hey, what's your name, huh?
I don't suppose he has a name. He is so young. I don't think he belongs to anybody.
Well, then we have to give him a name.
You mean we can keep him?
Keep him? What are you talking about? He has no home. We can't turn him out in the streets, can we?
Oh, Charles, I was hoping you'd let him stay.
Of course, but he must have a name. Yes, let's see. Oh, you're so black. Yes, all black. Beautiful. Not a single white mark. Oh, I have him. He's as black as the devil. Let's call him Pluto. Yes, we'll call you Pluto. Well, Pluto grew up to be a remarkably beautiful cat, and of all the animals in our house, he became my favorite and my playmate, yes. And until it all changed, yes. And as the years went on, my character suffered a radical change, and everything changed. Huh? Why? Well, I'm ashamed. I hate to admit it. Through intemperance, yes, through intemperance. And then, As drink became more and more necessary to me, I became more and more moody and irritable. I don't have to tell you where I'm going.
Oh, Charles, what's happening
to you? What do you mean, what's happening to me?
You never used to go out every night to those vile places.
Please stop nagging. Stop it. I go out because I can't stand listening to you. Nag, nag, nag all day long.
I don't know what's come over you.
There. See? Why don't you learn from Pluto? It's only a cat. He doesn't ask me where I'm going. Yes, that's right. You never do, no. Come here, Pluto. Yes, I like you. Come here.
Be careful, Charles. Don't pick him up like that. No,
I'm
you're
not hurting him.
Him.
I never hurt him. Ow! He bit me. He bit me. You devil. I'll show you.
Don't,
beast.
Charles. Don't.
I'll you, no. Beast. Yes, I hate to admit it, but I was so furious, I kicked Pluto, and I kicked him again, and hard, and the next morning, I saw that his ear was torn, and I was filled with remorse for what I'd done. From then on, Pluto ran away in terror whenever I approached, and that in turn made me more and more irritated, and in the end, it was sheer perverseness, nothing else, yes. Sheer and unexplainable perverseness that made me do what I did. Yeah, I blush to admit it, but one morning I strangled the poor animal. Yeah, I killed it only because I knew that it had loved me and because it had given me no reason for offense. No, I'm offering no excuse. I'm only recounting what happened. Well, in the evening, I went to the inn as usual, and I came home very late, and I fell fast asleep with my clothes on. Then I was awakened suddenly. Hey, what's the matter here?
Charles, wake up! Charles!
What's the matter?
There must be a fire. I smell smoke.
Look, good heavens, it's our house.
Oh.
Our house is burning. Come on, darling, come. We'll be trapped. Come on, hurry up.
Oh.
Quick. The stairs are on fire. There we go.
I can't.
Don't talk, sweetheart. Perhaps I can get you through the flames. Don't breathe, darling. Here's the front door. Yeah. We made it. We're safe.
Oh, Charles. Look, our house.
Anybody else in there?
No. Nobody else.
Just as well. Never could get them out now. Are you the owner?
Yes. That was our house.
Well, you haven't got much left then. We can't save it now.
Stand back! Stand back, everybody! The roof's gonna fall in! Stand back!
There it goes!
Well, it's down now.
Funny, nothing is left but that one wall in the middle.
Look at it.
What about it?
Well, look at it on the wall.
Hey, that is strange.
What are you talking about? What's strange?
Oh, there on the wall. It's still standing.
Oh, marks on the plaster.
Marks? Huh? What marks?
Well, what's the matter? You blind? Right up there on the wall, that black figure.
Oh yeah.
It looks like a cat.
Yeah, it does. The smoke must have done it, but it certainly does look like a cat.
What looks like a cat?
There, and it's got one floppy ear.
Who's got a floppy ear?
Funny. That's really funny.
Funny, huh? It's not funny. It is not funny at all, you hear? I know what it is. You know who it is? Yes, it's Pluto. I recognize him. Yeah, there, see? His ear is torn, huh? Oh, you beast. That hideous beast, it's come back to haunt me. Leave me alone! You hear? I can't stand it! I can't.
Get some water, somebody. This man's fainted.
The black cat is dead, killed by its master. The house is burned to the ground, with everything in it completely destroyed. Now the scene is the almost deserted, candle-lit taproom of a local inn.
Don't you think you'd better go on home, sir?
Hmm?
It's getting late.
Home, huh? You should see the terrible place where we're living now.
Yeah, I heard you. Lost everything in that fire.
Lost everything, yes, I lost everything. I lost my house, I lost everything.
Well, how about that black cat of yours you used to talk about all the time?
Huh?
What was his name?
What was his name? Pluto.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, Pluto's gone too. Oh, I tell you, I miss him. I miss him very much.
And if you miss him that much, why don't you get another cat?
Give me a drink.
It's getting pretty late, sir. I mean, well, won't your wife be expecting you?
Give me a drink.
Yes, sir. I'll have to fetch another bottle.
Why don't I get another cat, huh? That's what you said. Why don't I? No reason I shouldn't. No reason to be in the deeps of despair just because of a cat. If I get another cat, maybe I'll be able to forget her. What's that? Oh, there's a cat now. Yes, it's sitting on top of the table. Black cat, huh? That's strange. I've been staring at that table for 5 minutes. I could swear there was no cat on it. Anyway, where did you come from, huh? Oh, you're a beautiful cat, yes. You're just as black as Pluto. Yeah, except you got a splotch of white on your chest. Yeah. That's right, yeah. Oh, yes, come. Come sit on my lap, huh? Oh, yeah. Kitty, kitty, yes, you're a nice kitty. You're a nice cat.
Yeah. Here you are, sir.
Where did this cat come from?
Cat? Oh, yeah. Yeah, big one, isn't he? Well, I don't know where it came from, or how it got in, either, for that matter. Never seen it around here before.
Do you know who it belongs to?
No. As far as I'm concerned, it belongs to you if you want it. Can't keep it here. A wife doesn't like cats. Especially black ones.
Don't like cats, huh? How stupid. Yeah. See, I want it. Yes, sir. I want it very much. I'll take it home with me right now.
This is such a wonderful cat. Just since last week, it's made itself so much at home. Well, you think it had lived here always.
Yes, I've noticed that.
It reminds me so much of Pluto.
Yes, but this one has a patch of white on its chest. Don't forget that.
Yes, that's right, dear. But I can't help wondering. I wonder whatever became of Pluto. He disappeared the day of the fire.
I know he disappeared, and... Well, maybe he knew the house was going to burn down.
Oh, see how it loves you. It's rubbing against your leg, just the way Pluto used to.
Pluto! Stop talking about Pluto!
Darling, I didn't mean anything. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry, dear. Always talk about how much this new cat resembles Pluto. It just makes me even nervous. Look, actually, there's hardly any resemblance at all, really. Except that they're both black. This one has a white patch on its chest and...
Oh, the poor thing. Charles, look, his ear is torn.
Huh?
See?
What?
Here, under the fur. Oh, I never noticed that before.
Neither did I.
Why, it's just the way Pluto's... I mean...
Go ahead, say it. It's torn, yes. Just the way Pluto's ear was torn when I kicked him, huh? That's it, isn't it?
Well, he must have been in a fight or something. But it's curious we didn't notice
Curious, huh? You have no idea how curious it is. No idea. Get that cat out of my sight.
Charles, you're mad.
Get it out.
How can you act
sight.
That way about a poor, dumb animal?
Take it out of
Especially one
here.
That loved you so much. Oh, now you frightened it, dear.
Get away from me, you hear me?
The way you talk, anybody think you don't even like the poor
like
cat.
Like it, huh? Like it. I hate it. I tell you, I hate it. I hate it! Yes, in a short time the cat had been with us. I'd come to look upon it with unutterable loathing. Why, I don't know yet. The more I hated it, the more affectionate it acted toward me. Wherever I went, it followed. Whenever I sat down, it would spring upon my knees and cover me with its loathsome caresses, as if this were not enough. The white patch on its chest, which originally it had been very indefinite in shape, but gradually it assumed a very definite outline, yes, the unmistakable and ghastly shape of the gallows. A terrible engine of horror, of agony, and of death. I longed to destroy the beast, but I was prevented by an absolute, unreasonable dread. I was sure I was losing my mind.
Are you going out again?
Yes, I'm going out. I don't know when I'll be back.
Oh. Before you go, do you suppose you...
Why, what is it?
Will you help me bring up some wood from the cellar?
Why do you always want more wood?
The house is cold. You know I haven't been feeling well. I'm not strong enough to carry
not
it myself.
Strong enough. All right, come on, I'll help you. You might have thought of this before, too.
Look out!
What?
Oh.
Oh, that's cat. That's that beast again. It's always under my feet. It tried to trip me on the stairs.
I'm sure it did.
I'll get rid of that beast. Once and for all, I'll get...
Charles! Put down that crowbar.
Get out of my way.
No, stop.
I say get out of my way. Let go of my arm.
Please, Charles, you're going
to let go of my
it.
Arm. Are you going to let go?
Oh, please!
I said let go! Why didn't you let me go? Yes, she'd fallen dead without a groan. My blind rage, my rage against the cat, I'd struck my wife and killed her. Well, nothing I can do about it now. All I could do was to set myself to the task of concealing the body. Yes, I thought and I deliberated, and then it occurred to me that, yes, in the Middle Ages, they used to wall up their victims, and I determined to do the same thing. Yes, behind the wall in a cellar. I managed to dislodge a section of bricks near the chimney, and in a hole behind them, I propped the body. Then I carefully laid the bricks back in their original position. And when I had finished, no one could have told that the wall had been disturbed at all. Well, I could say to myself triumphantly, here at least, my labor has not been in vain. My next step, then, was to look for the beast that had been a cause of so much misery, but then I became aware that it had completely disappeared. Huh? 3 days passed, and still my tormentor did not appear. Oh, it's impossible to describe or to imagine the deep sense of my relief. For the first time in months, I slept, yes. I slept. Even with the burden of murder on my soul. Yes, some few inquiries were made about my wife's whereabouts, and a search of the house was conducted, but nothing was discovered. Oh, I finally could look upon my future secure. Yes?
Good day, sir. Sorry to disturb you again, sir.
No. It's you, Sergeant. Is there anything I can do for you?
Well, they're still puzzled about your wife's disappearance.
Puzzled, huh? Well, so am I.
Well, some of her friends have been around at the police station.
What's that got to do with me, huh? You've already searched the house twice. What do you want?
Well, I know, sir, but... Well, the captain sent me and the constable here to look around just once more, to be sure there's no clues been overlooked. Mm-hmm. This will be the last time, sir. Only a matter of routine. Mm-hmm. We won't bother you again.
All right. Come in.
Thank you, sir. Come on, Joe.
Right.
Where would you like to look first?
Well, we might as well begin with the cellar.
Cellar, huh? All right, yes. Right down these steps. I'll come with you.
Yes, I always say searching a house is like getting ahead in the world. You start at the bottom.
Yes, I see. It's very funny.
Well, come on, Constable. Get to work.
Right.
While they searched, I folded my arms and watched. As before, they discovered nothing, but as they were about to depart, the glee in my heart was too strong to be restrained. I burned to say but one word, yes, just one word, but by way of triumph. And as they started up the steps, I said, have you noticed, this is a very well-constructed house, you know. Hey, gentlemen, you're not going, are you? Yes, it's an excellently well-constructed house. You've never seen such a well-constructed house in a frenzy of my bravado upon that very portion of the brickwork behind which stood the corpse of my wife. I rapped with my cane. Let me heaven deliver me from the arch fiend. What was that?
Mother of mercy, what was that?
Wind, probably.
Wind? That's not the wind. It came when you hit this wall here. Whatever it is, it's behind these bricks, Sarge. Here, take this crowbar and knock that wall down.
Right.
Wait a minute, you.
Keep quiet, you.
You can't do this.
Wait a minute. Where are you going?
Upstairs.
You stay right here.
Hey, this is new plaster. It hasn't even had time to set yet.
Pull it down.
Right. Here she comes. Look out.
There's what we're looking for, all right. His wife's body.
What's that horrible-looking thing sitting on her head?
It's the cat!
How did that
cat get in there?
I know how it got in there. Yes, I know why. I must have walled it up in a tomb, and I never knew it, no. Look at that red mouth. Those burning eyes. You hideous. You beast. You monster. You are the devil. You made me a murderer. Now for 3 days you've been in there, waiting to send me to the gallows. Well, the hangman will get me. Yes, I hope you're satisfied. I hope you're satisfied.
Next week, Mystery in the Air, starring Mr. Peter Lorre, brings you an adaptation of one of our star's greatest motion pictures, Crime and Punishment, based on the book by Fyodor Dostoevsky, with a special musical score composed and conducted by Paul Barron.
This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
Mystery in the Air on Tuned to Yesterday from September 18th, 1947 on NBC. And that ends this hour of horror on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's yesteryear. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. It's been a pleasure.